Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Lara Gommans, and I'm here with our producer, Elliot Bloom.
Let's go.
It is the end of the year, so we'll be one of many podcasts doing a kind of 2025 roundup. What did we like? What did we hate? Why were so many movies kind of mid? So I'm such a positive person. I think it would be best to start with what are the movies. We are both on Letterboxd, by the way, if you want to find us. I wanted to look at the movies that we gave 5 stars personally. We just looked it up before we started recording. I gave 3 movies 5 stars. You gave 3 movies 5 stars as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And then kind of came around on one of them and removed half a star.
Well, another one was 5 stars, but not because it's the best film of the year kind of vibes. But
right,
we'll get into that.
Do you want to talk about what your...
Want to guess? Oh, no, you saw.
I saw. So that's not really a valid question. I'm an actress. I can pretend. No, I saw what they were, and I think they are great choices, if you would like to talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, so obviously I was a big, big fan of One Battle After Another.
Yeah.
I went on record saying One Battle After Another was the best film of the 2020s. Not
controversial
just,
statement. No, it's the correct statement.
I think, although I've watched another film since then that has perhaps changed my mind, I would still say as a blockbuster, it is up there. It's like...
Yeah.
It's now set the bar of everything I expect a blockbuster to be. It's quite funny, actually. There was I now watch TikTok sometimes as well.
Oh, we got him.
There's like people. There's this one person, for instance, like criticizing the film for not being radical enough, and then people are like, "Yeah, but that's not the point of the film. If you think it's going to be a radical film, then you're watching it for the wrong reasons."
Yeah,
and I think once you let go of that and just enjoy it for what it is, I think it's really a remarkable film. Of course, it comes with its own critiques and all of this, but what film doesn't? And I think the discussions are very interesting. Yeah, it's just such a great...
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that we have in common in our 5-star movies. Yeah. I also just walked out of it and it's like, my hands are tied. I got to give this 5 stars. This was great. This was perfect. Again, I'll repeat, I hate when they make me like Leonardo DiCaprio because I don't like him, but he's such a good actor. And yeah, it not being activist or radical enough, I think that's the whole point of the movie, is that all of these generations are like trying their thing and failing in the face of fascism and hopefully the next generation will do it. So yeah, it's not a point about them being perfect activists. Like, clearly they're not. But yeah, there's always interesting discussions around movies like this.
Yeah, and I think as a cinematic experience, it's incredible. Like, wow. I saw this twice IMAX.
Which formats? Just IMAX? Both,
yeah.
It's not awesome. Really wanted to see it in VistaVision in London. Yeah. I didn't get to, but IMAX. Awesome.
But should I tell you my other ones?
Yes, please.
Okay, so my next one was by Seppi De Farsi. It's the documentary Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk, and it follows a young Palestinian photojournalist from Gaza, and it's the director having an ongoing conversation with Fatima Husna of just how, what a life is like day to day being inside and inside this open air prison. Mm-hmm. And I think, of course, it's not necessarily the best film you're going to watch, but it's probably one of the
most important ones,
you're going to watch this year, because not enough films are being made about what's going on. And I think the sort of filtered and strangled nature of information that is coming out of Gaza really shows you just quite a feat that Sepida has managed with this film, by gaining access of what life is like inside, and more just, yeah, the banality of going through a genocide, of just not knowing what your next meal is like. And although a ceasefire is now in place, it doesn't really change much. The material conditions are still the same. So that's why I give it 5 stars, because I was so moved by it that it was an important reminder of why these films need to keep being made, especially now.
Also, if you're interested in that movie, if you've seen that movie, you had a really interesting conversation with Sepide on this very podcast.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it, but I am very intrigued by the story. Yeah, I would love to see it.
Yeah. And finally, my final film, and I'm so excited to talk about this. I watched it a week ago at IDFA. It's called Black News, Terms and Condition. It's by the visual artist turned filmmaker, but always really a filmmaker, Khalil Joseph. People might know him from his exhibitions, but he also makes incredible music videos, especially with Flying Lotus. And he likes to describe this film as if you're listening to an album, of how each song is different, or there's a through line throughout, but each song can sort of go on its own journey and then bring you back to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's, I'm finally excited by something that is sort of breaking the notion of what our ideas of film is and can be, because I think we feel it a bit, and I'm sure we're going to discuss this, with how blockbusters feel very tired, the narrative structure seems far too predictable, and this weaves together documentary and fiction of trying to tell the history of Black America in a way, but also more to, it centers around two figures, Marcus Garvey, who is much more of a militant Black independence leader calling for Africans to, or Black African Americans to return to their homeland, to Africa, and to invest in building Africa.
Right.
And that's paired against this very intellectual thinker called W.B. Du Bois. And it can seem very intellectual or in that realm, but he does it in such a fun way that it really feels like almost watching a DJ mixing in how he plays with the film itself. But I think the best way to try and give you an understanding of how,
give me an understanding, because like I can't really visualize what this would look like in, in movie
it's,
form.
It's very much, again, hard to explain, like a collage of things, of taking archival clips and then putting it in context with perhaps stuff from social media that he finds to try and tell a story, then creating, it's set all within like this futuristic utopian place where they have these big boats where Black people will, or Black Americans will gather, and they talk about their culture and their history, but in a more, in a way that sort of liberates themselves from the trauma and allows them to talk about it literally as things that have happened, and to celebrate the aspects of history that they don't get to talk about. The place of the boat is like these more fictional elements, and then it sort of manages to spotlight certain aspects of Black history or African history that doesn't get spoken about enough, but also weave it in a way that creates a new fictional possibility.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that really excited me is, so Khalil Joseph spoke after, the way he's thinking about film is super interesting. So often we hear the excuse that theaters don't get filled anymore because people's attention spans are too short, that social media has ruined our attention span.
Yeah.
And he argues the opposite almost. He says it's up to the filmmakers to make good enough films to want you to come to the cinema.
Fair enough.
And he says that social media isn't the issue. It is the issue, but for the wrong reasons. That people are very happy to spend hours on Instagram, on YouTube, because for them the content's good enough for them, for whatever reason.
Also gives you a lot more dopamine. Yeah, like
sure, there's that aspect, but it still hooks you in a way, or you can watch a YouTube series if it's good enough, or if it speaks to you. And so that's what he's trying to do with film in a way, not necessarily of it being dopamine-y or sort of shocking, as we know social media can be, but
kind of challenging what people think documentaries are.
Yeah.
Which a lot of Idfa, I love Idfa, but a lot of it is what people who don't go to documentaries are think what documentaries are, where it's like, oh, this is like a 3.5 hour long study of da da da. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I miss it at Idfa. I hope to see it.
Watch what he does. I think he's going to be very interesting. So he's been working in film for ages, but this was his first feature film, and now I hope he gets to continue making more films, because I think he has the potential to change the landscape of American cinema,
to know how to speak to this generation.
Yeah
That's really cool.
But tell me, what are your other two?
Okay, so the first one we don't really have to talk about much, because we quite recently talked about it. It was Bugonia. I said that I gave it 5 stars, and there it was. I thought this was such a fun ride. Just like looking back on it, there's just so many things that stick with me. And I think, you know, now that we're a couple of months removed from it, I think the score is one of the things that is just so goofy. I don't know. I just really loved that movie and everyone's performance in it. I hope they both get the Oscar nominations they deserve, Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons. It's not really looking like it right now for Jesse Plemons, which is a big bummer for me. The other one we also already talked about on the podcast, which is, by the way, the only podcast I've ever cried on. It's Sorry, Baby. Yeah. I thought that was a stunning movie, a directorial debut. She wrote the movie. She stars in the movie. This girl, Eva Victor, who I had been following on Instagram for a long time. Mm. She was an actress and also a comedian before. Yeah, if you haven't gone to see this yet, I thought this was just totally brilliant. It's a masterclass in finding the balance on how to talk about sexual assault in a way that doesn't make it like a full drama movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, like I think you can tell from my reaction on the podcast then, I think it's something that's really stuck with me yeah. in my life and where what I've been like talking to friends about. And it was so impactful, yet it was enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
It was difficult to watch at some points, but it was also light. And I think we really need more movies like that. And I don't think enough people saw it, which if I can get like maybe 3 or 4 of you guys to watch it, I'll be happy because it is a revelation. Those were our 5 stars.
Yeah.
I think Sorry Baby for me was also the biggest surprise. It kind of came out of left field. It wasn't one of those like auteur movies. I think another one that was a big surprise for me was It Was Just an Accident, which we also briefly touched on a couple episodes ago. I just want to say how great I thought that movie was. And I hate to say it's not a movie that I would usually go for.
Yeah.
Because I always feel like between you and I, you are a film person and I'm a movie person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
I think because this won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, I was like, oh, I'm interested in seeing this movie about Iran. And I'm really glad I did. It was just really well made, and I think it gave me a lot more understanding of the situation that is going on there right now and how that's still feeling. So that was a big surprise for me. Do you have any big surprises this year?
I think Black News would have been a big surprise because it was not on my
radar
at all. But I would say maybe Eddington.
Right.
Not that it was a 5-star for me, but I really enjoyed it, and I really liked what Ari Aster is trying to do. And I think it, again, also if you look at it in combination with Begonia and One Battle After Another, it signals a big shift in what's about to happen within Hollywood, I think, because directors have to come to terms with the fact that they're making films within a fascist state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Trump himself also famously called himself a fascist.
Oh, amazing. We're at that point now. Awesome.
Yeah.
Who knows where we'll be when this podcast comes out. We're recording it about 3 weeks ahead. Yeah, no, that's something I also wrote down, is like this year clearly has a theme with that Holy Trinity, that deal with the sign of the times.
Yeah.
That use like phones and the phones and the social media existing and conspiracy theorists existing. And I don't want to talk badly of your people. But yeah, that was really evident because they both kind of came out within the time span of like 2 months. I was like, gosh, I think we're all just going to make movies about this now. And I think that's interesting. We had 3 really good ones. So yeah, that was a surprise to me as well, because obviously Aster has been doing a different type of movie. And then Beau's Afraid is a little bit more towards this.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to me that this one was kind of way more rooted in like a grounded way.
Yeah. I think the surprise, which we are going to come on to talk about now, is also about how mid a lot of films were, especially from big directors, which I found also quite disappointing.
Yeah, because like I remember at the start of this year, you're looking at the release list, it's like, oh my God, we get an Aronofsky, we get Celine Song, we get the Benny Safdie one, we get
Tim Ramsey,
Soderbergh, we get so many, but like Bong Joon-ho, Lynn Ramsey, Catherine Bigelow, like all these great auteurs. Yeah. We're making movies, and from all the directors I just mentioned, I thought all of those were kind of mid, unfortunately. Is there one that stood out to you from those? Because I feel like, for example, Mickey 17 came out quite at the beginning of this year, so it's not even really in the conversation anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of sadly a forgettable film.
Yeah, because I was looking at my Letterboxd stats, because I'm a paying member, and I saw that I initially gave it 4 stars, then I brought it down to 3.5 stars, and now I looked at my list like, oh yeah, I had totally forgot, like that made zero impact on me, like in hindsight. I'm like, oh, I guess that was fun while watching it, but yeah.
That I had, I think The Materialists, I think more just of how bad it was because of how good I Know Celine's Song is, or just how good Past Lives was, that I was quite sad about that. Maybe even Kelly Reichardt's film, The Mastermind.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I was just, whenever she makes a film, it really comes with a punch, even though it's very slow.
Yeah.
But this, no.
I understand that it didn't really do that. Yeah. I didn't think it was mid. I thought it was nice. I thought it was nice, but not great. So yeah, I guess it ends on the higher end to low.
Premium tier mid. Sorry, to come back to the question, the talk of surprise, Sinners. Ryan Coogler,
which
we never really
because that already feels so far away.
Yeah,
but yes, absolutely, big surprise of this year.
Obviously, a big box office smash, but refreshing that such a big director is given the chance with his own IP, especially a Black American director, because those chances are few and far between. So yeah, and I hope he keeps getting. I hope now that he's sort of cemented himself as this like premier tier or elite level. Blockbuster director, he can now get free reign of whatever he wants to make.
Yeah, I hope so. I can't wait to see what. Do you know what he's doing next?
No, I don't know.
I have no idea. Oh, okay. So after this, he is doing Black Panther 3.
Okay.
Which was recently confirmed. Is this true or is this just AI? No, it is true. I hate now that's when I so Google scary. Something, it goes and gives me the AI overview, and I'm a sucker for it and I read it. Yeah, again, something I also wanted to briefly touch on is movies that we're either curious about or we did see, even though they didn't come out in the Netherlands in cinemas. The one that I was most disappointed in not getting released over here is Friendship.
Yes.
Friendship is Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd. If you're not familiar with Tim Robinson, it's that guy that does sketches that always end up with him yelling really loud. He recently did that HBO show, The Chair Company, which I also highly recommend. But this is just like, it's such a particular sense. Have you seen it?
No, but I've watched I Think You Should Leave.
Yeah, so you know what he's about. Yeah, yeah. I thought this format worked better for him. Because I Think You Should Leave stresses me out because it's just like 4-minute sketches that all end in him screaming. And I'm just kind of like, this format is way more. So basically he's, of course, a huge loser. And Paul Rudd is his neighbor who just moved in down the street and he's really cool. And then this guy just like goes out of his way to impress, like try impress his neighbor. And it just gets so weird. But it's also, it was just one of the funniest movies I've seen in a long, long time. And it's so, he's truly just like a voice in comedy. I really like that he has such a particular sense of humor that really works for me. So I'm bummed that they didn't come out here. So I'm not going to say you should watch it illegally because I would never tell you to watch something illegally. But, you know, you'll find a way to watch it, I'm sure.
Yeah, for me, it would be Resurrection by Bigan. He's this Chinese director. It's quite niche, but he made this film called A Long Day's Journey Into Night, which did get a release in the Netherlands a few years ago. And again, he's very playful with the form of cinema, which I really enjoy because, again, it's pushing our ideas further. And I've heard great things about Resurrection and that it's sort of an anthology rather than a traditional film. So I would love to see that.
So we've talked about peak, to speak in Gen Z lingo, we've talked about peak and mid. What would Gen Z say when something's bad? What do they say? Sigma's also good.
I don't even know what sigma means.
You're 27 years old. You should know what sigma is.
Yeah, I've heard it used. But
anyway, bad. Just in millennial language, which ones did we not like?
Yeah, or I know maybe it's a UK thing, but we say films that could get in the bin.
Oh, films that could get in the bin. Oh, man.
Yeah, what would you say?
I was just looking at my Letterboxd and I realized that when I really don't like a movie, I won't rate it.
Yeah.
Because this is always the thing. It's like, I realize that making a movie is really hard. I get it. Like, it's hard to make a movie. So I think I'll just focus more on disappointments, things that I expected to be good. Because something like The Monkey or something like Osgood Perkins, or what was that Robbie Williams one? Was that this year? God awful. Yeah. But those were things that I already thought I was going to think were bad. But here I wrote down Jurassic World Rebirth. I was excited for a new chapter, move away from Chris Pratt. I think any move away from Chris Pratt is a good move. However, it just failed to deliver for me. I thought it fell flat. The dinosaurs looked boring as hell. Yeah. It was weightless and I didn't give a shit about anyone. And if they died, I would have just been glad that the movie was over. I wrote two more. One was After the Hunt, which I believe we also talked about. Yeah. Did we talk about it on the podcast? I think so. Luca Guadagnino, which I just thought didn't really add anything valuable to the conversation. I didn't really know what it was trying to add to the conversation. And it was just a little bit disappointing, like a lot disappointing for someone who really likes Luca Guadagnino. And then there's one that happened recently, which I can't even rate because I walked out.
No.
Yeah. Wow. I walked out of the Bruce Springsteen movie.
Oh.
I couldn't do it.
I'm not surprised.
I couldn't do it. I'm just done. I'm done.
Biopics
I'm done.
Are dead.
I'm done. I don't want to see your dumb black and white flashback about you, how your dad used to be an alcoholic and hit you. And that's why you're now a singer-songwriter who's fucked up. I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. And Jeremy Allen White looked like a freak with those contacts. I did not like that at all. And I don't know. I think I was like 40 minutes in and I looked at my phone. And I was like, 40 minutes in? Jesus Christ. And then there was just a moment where he like, talking to this girl he met 5 minutes ago and she's so quirky because she sticks her head out the window, which means she like really loves life and has like a zest for life, and that like inspires him, and they kiss within like 3 minutes. I'm like, I don't care. I want to go for a walk and I want to eat lunch. I could be like spending my time better. So I think I also don't think I was really expecting that much from the Bruce Springsteen movie, but I do love Bruce Springsteen, so it was kind of hoping to like it more than I did.
I'm curious how someone is going to reinvent musical biopics because it needs to be done. Yeah, kneecaps. Good work. Yeah,
they did
That's a great example.
What about you? Which ones were
Begonia?
Okay, hey, yeah. If you want to listen to that episode where we fiercely disagree on Begonia,
The Phoenician Scheme. Not that I expect much from Wes Anderson these days, but I think it was the point where
I agree.
I was very tired of it all.
I mean, Phoenician Scheme, I definitely put in the mid category.
Yeah.
Where like, oh, that was kind of mid. Mm, didn't feel anything. I didn't fully hate it, but.
I think for me, it was just like, it's now another Wes Anderson film that is mid. Right. But it's just like, you're wasting my time.
Is he even a good director? Are we all being gaslit?
The only other one that I thought was dreadful is a film coming out called Sing Song Blue, or no, Song
Song Song Song Blue,
starring Kate Hudson and Hugh Jackman, which is about like a tribute.
Isn't it about Neil Diamond?
Yeah, it's like a tribute act to Neil Diamond. But like, if you ever want an example of how broken Hollywood films have become and how mechanical it is, I think it's a great example because everything you can imagine happens, from people getting heart attacks to people losing their legs to...
So what you said was everything you expect to happen happens. People losing their legs. It's like, yeah, it's like, here we go again. Another one of those movies where someone loses their leg.
No, I just mean...
Can I just say, to the movie's credit, I have not seen it. I did not expect someone to lose their leg in a movie about a Neil Diamond tribute band. So, okay, continue.
But I've explained it a bit wrong, but more just how like, oh, how one bad thing can happen after another to sort of drive home the fact of how tough it is for someone and then for them to keep picking themselves up and then...
To be in a Neil Diamond cover band?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, yeah. It doesn't
make
sense.
Because when I saw it, I was like, this could really go either way. Like, this could be like... The new I, Tonya, or it could be dog shit. But yeah, I haven't managed to attend a screening yet.
I did go with an open mind and I thought it'd be something a bit more lighthearted and fun, but then it just becomes basically a musical biopic, but about someone who is in a tribute band.
Worse.
Yeah. So.
Oh, no. Because, I think there is a way to do a movie about a Neil Diamond cover band and have it be hella fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if it's something like Nirvana, the band, the show or something where it's just, I think that could be really fun. Is that based on a true story? I think I read something about
it. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, stop doing that.
Yeah.
Just let a true story, just send me the link to the article. Yeah. Yeah, I'll exactly read the article.
Right. I've been thinking about why is it that we feel that we need to turn true real life stories into these over glamorized films? Because
especially if they just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. Yeah.
What else did we have? We wanted to do, any films that, because we're obviously recording this a little bit before the end of the year.
Because we're going away for Christmas.
Yeah. Are there any films that you're perhaps excited to see that are coming out in the next, between December and January?
Ooh. I need to.
Or that are going to be part of the. Festival awards nominations.
I mean, I'm really excited to see Hamnet. I haven't managed to attend the screening yet. That one I'm very excited about. Let me just pull up the film release list. Oh, 26th. Oh, that's February. Yeah, that's Feb. Sorry. Wuthering Heights comes out in February, and I am the president of the Emerald Fennell Hater Club. Is it the opposite of a fan club? However, that Charlie XCX and John Cale song came out, and I was like, wait, is this going to be cool?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. So that could be cool. Here we have some other things. I feel like Avatar, I'm not excited about.
What? I'm so excited.
Are you an Avatar head?
Not necessarily a massive head, but I always enjoyed the experience of going to watch an Avatar film, even though there's only been two.
There's only been two? Oh my God, I feel like I've seen 1,000 hours of Avatar.
Yeah.
Did you know that James Cameron, after Titanic, didn't do anything else but make fucking Avatar movies?
Really?
And he's going to make like two more.
Yeah, there's going to be five.
It's going to be the last thing he ever does. And I think doing some projects after that. He's doing a movie about that Japanese guy who survived both the atomic bombs.
Oh.
I think that's in the cards somewhere down the line when he finishes making another 1,000 Avatar films. I posted a TikTok asking if Avatar fans exist. Because you never meet an Avatar fan. Yeah. Oh, people were mad at me. Turns out they're there. They're just undercover.
I mean, Hugo is a big Avatar fan.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm surprised, but I think I'm surprised. But then also Hugo is an enigma to me. So for those who don't know, Hugo's our co-host on this podcast. What else is coming out?
So Brady Colbert, the director of The Brutalist, he has written with his wife a film called The Testament of Anne Lee. And it's directed by her, Mona Fassbold. And it looks incredible. So I'm very excited to watch that as well. I think it's going to be quite a special viewing. It stars also Amanda Seyfried.
She's having a good year.
Yeah, it gives similar vibes to The Brutalist in sort of this epic story shot in such a beautiful way. So that would be one for me.
I can't find it yet on the release list.
Yeah.
Which, please.
Isn't a good sign. But maybe then, to wrap up, how would you look back on 2025 in terms of film and cinema?
Yeah, it's always weird when you're in it. I feel like it's always so much easier to look back on a year when you've had a little bit of room to breathe.
Yeah.
But I think there were quite a few good ones. I think what we just talked about is that there were a lot of things I was looking forward to that turned out to be mid. But there were also some surprises for, also, by the way, Weapons, we didn't mention, also a big surprise to me. So I think across the board, I think it did bring us quite a few movies that will stand the test of time.
Yeah.
I think Weapons is one of them. I definitely think One Battle is one of them. So I think, it's hard to say, but I think if we take some distance from this year, I think we'll see which movies survive, and I think those are two that definitely will.
I think for me, 2025 will mark a sort of juncture or an interesting turning point of cinema taking a specific kind of turn, both in the themes of films that it's going to make and maybe also the scale of films that we're going to see. So we haven't seen enough of first-time directors, I think, this year, but Ava Victor is a good example. But I think hopefully we'll start to see some more, as I think big studios are going to feel the constraints of not being able to invest big and bigger budgets into big blockbusters. So I'm excited for that.
I love when you've like really thought about an answer and I'm just like, oh, I don't know. We'll just go. We'll just have to see. And you just come up with this like brilliant thesis.
Thanks.
Anyway, let us know what you thought of this film year. Yes. What were your highlights, your lowlights? We love to gossip about some bad movies. So know where to find us, all over social media, in the comment section on Spotify. Reach out to us. We love to see it. Let's see what 2026 has in store for us.
Oh, yeah. And Marty Supreme obviously comes
Marty
out
Supreme.
In February, even though Timothy Chalamet and Ding Dong is doing a big whole marketing thing.
He's like marketing Christmas Day. Again, the Netherlands. We don't get any of that. Oh, bummer. Yeah, I'm really excited to see how the Safdies kind of like square off against each other with their weird sports biopics.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's in the Netherlands. That's coming up in 2026. In the new year, of course, we'll also be keeping you up to date with all new releases. We hope to catch you on the flip side.
Stay connected with us at Celebrating Cinema and Lab by following at Lab111 on Instagram and Letterboxd. Do you love what we do? Support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us climb the ranks of the podcast charts. This was a Lab111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzahl and artwork from Studio FFF.